I love Jesus. And I love that even with all of his grace and compassion, he sometimes shows us a moment of frustration. I love it because it proves to me his humanness. Because being human means sometimes getting fed up. So Jesus' words here stand out. He says, "To what will I compare this generation? It is like children sitting in the marketplaces and calling out to one another. We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We wailed, and you did not mourn. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say he has a demon. The Son of Man, he came eating and drinking, and they say, 'Look, a glutton and a drunkard, friend of tax collectors and sinners.'" David Lowes, who is the president of Lutheran Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, he says that what's going on could easily be called sinister, except it's just far too human to attribute those kinds of motives to it. Instead, he says, it's something of a two-step waltz that human beings do. In the first step, we decide what we think God should be, which is usually something that affirms what we believe, how we think and feel. And then in the second step, we judge everybody that we meet, including their beliefs about God, by the image that we have created in our own minds. The thing is that when we create this notion of God, we almost always find that God agrees with us in every way, which is usually a pretty good indication that we've got something wrong. Lowe's says, "I think that's pretty much what's going on in this scene from Matthew. John the Baptist comes along and he doesn't measure up. He doesn't conform to what the folks present think he should be like. He's too reclusive. He's too ascetic. A loner. Too somber, surely, and very serious. He should eat and drink more." Well, then Jesus comes and he's too much the opposite. He drinks and eats too much, and with the wrong kind of people to boot. Lowe's calls this, and I love it, the Goldilocks syndrome. That we are just never quite satisfied. John, and the God that John represents, is just too severe. While Jesus, and the God he represents, is just too accepting. We would like our religious leaders to be just right. Which pretty much means just like us. But here's the thing, Lowe's asks. If God were just like us, then who would save us? Which is perhaps why our own pictures of God are so appealing to us. They don't threaten us. They don't expect change from us. They don't ask us to do all that much. Really, they don't do much more than affirm us. And affirmation is great, even necessary at times, but it doesn't save. And so God comes along, first in John the Baptist, and then even more fully in Jesus, And in part, this is just to disrupt our pictures of God, to shake our hands loose from holding those pictures which so easily turn into idols. Now, it's not really possible for us to live without some picture of God. And inevitably, simply because we're human, mortal, fallible, sinful, we will likely picture God in ways that are both helpful and unhelpful, clear as well as distorted. And so God shows up where we least expect God to be, in order to shake us up, in order to call what we thought we knew for sure into question, in order to surprise us by being so different than what we expected, and yet precisely what we need. No wonder Jesus gives thanks that God has revealed all this not to the wise, but to infants, because that alone surprises us. It makes us think twice. It challenges our preconceptions. It refuses to give in to our Goldilocks-like preferences. And Jesus does another thing in this passage as well. He doesn't just simply call our pictures and expectations into question, but he also gives us another picture. God is the one who bears our burdens. God is the one who shows up in our need. God is the one who comes alongside of us. Now, it's not necessarily what we want. Often we would prefer a God who takes away our problems rather than helps us cope with them, who eliminates challenges rather than equips us for them, who squashes our opponents rather than enables us to make peace with them. Again, it's not usually what we want, but pretty much exactly what we need. And all of this should shape not only our picture of the God that we know in Jesus, but also what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. I think that we constantly need this reminder that God always shows up where we least expect God to be. In the need of our neighbor, in the person that doesn't look anything like you, in the person who believes and acts and thinks differently than you do, and perhaps most importantly, the person who believes and thinks and acts differently than you think they should. And we need the solid reminder that in all these circumstances, our call is the same: to care for them, to meet them where they are, to accept them as we are able. This means the Muslim person, the person covered in tattoos wearing leather, the homeless person, the single mom, the refugee, the gay person, transgender person, the child. Our role is not to judge, but to see God in them and to extend our hands and our hearts to them. It is not easy work. But as we undertake this kind of discipleship, we discover that Jesus is already there, waiting for us encouraging us, forgiving us, helping us bear the burden of discipleship, which is what makes the burden light. The yoke not just easy, but joyful. Taking off the yoke that is heavy with our own expectations of God and of others, it's really a relief. Putting on the yoke of discipleship that meets God in every person, it's still weighty, but it's a much nicer burden because it's shared with Jesus. And in taking on that yoke, we realize in every person we meet, we find ourselves looking at the face of God. And that is just right. Amen.